Welcome to the Art of High Performance Living. I am your host, Iron Mike Stone. We speak with best-selling authors, business leaders, CEOs, entrepreneurs, and the pros that know. Hello, everybody out there. This is Iron Mike Stone with another radio show. Today, I am thrilled and excited to introduce Kara Ruda. Kara is a USA Today best-selling author. She brings 20-plus years of marketing experience into her career. Eight Essentials for Women Entrepreneur was her first book. And, of course, we're excited about entrepreneurs on this show, so we're going to get into that a little bit. She was the first female-focused, real estate-branded founder of a great real estate business, multiple awards, Forbes Top 50 winner in business, the Kiwanis Humanitarian. We'll get a little bit into that. Then, of course, in 2010, she took a giant leap, moved across the country, and became a full-time author. And you know we love stories like that. So we're going to talk about her career since 2010, writing, I think, according to my research there, it looks like four or five novels. Her most recent book I just finished reading this weekend. It is fascinating. Best day ever. The suspense and the thrill of it was just terrific. So with that, Kara, say hello to the listeners.
Gosh, thanks for that intro. Hi. Thank you for having me.
Hi. Wonderful to have you here. So again, the format here, we're going to talk a little bit about you because we're very, very interested in you. And we love people with exciting, interesting stories. And I tell you, from my research on you, you've got a very interesting background. So take me back. The one thing I did see in your intro is I believe you said that you wanted to be an author since, was it the age of three?
Third grade.
Okay.
Yeah, so,
wow.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because that's the first career I can remember ever wanting. And it helped because we were in third grade and we had to write to a person whose job we wanted to have someday. And so I remember that part and our teacher encouraging us to write. So I wrote to the author, Robert McCloskey, of my favorite books, like Make Way for Ducklings, Blueberries for Sale, that whole, all those stories. And he wrote back and said, I picked the wrong person because he's an illustrator, not an author, but good luck. So that kind of started my illustrious author dreams. But the fact that he wrote back was amazing. And, you know, that's like one of those signs in life. You got to just keep going.
Even if you pick the wrong hero. You remember it. You remember it to this day. So that obviously had a great impression on you. Well, you definitely lived your dream from that young little age that you've become a very successful author. You're that young girl, I'm sure, would be very proud of the woman you've become to be. Pretty neat.
Thanks.
Just take me back a little bit because you didn't immediately get out of school and become an author. It looks like you had a pretty solid career as a C-level executive in marketing and advertising. Is that right?
Right. So I went to college and I didn't have the confidence in myself to start writing. So I didn't even have a byline until after college. I knew that I wanted to be either Darren Stevens on Bewitched or write novels. So I ended up, of course, as a journalist in a business newspaper. And that was my first job and first byline. And so from there, I kind of wove my way between either freelance writing for magazines and other publications while also kind of building my marketing career.
So coming out of college, you were doing some writing then.
In the writing field, I did, and I always kind of had, I guess they call it side hustles now, my kid was telling me, but I always had a writing project going at all the time, and when I kind of segued into the advertising world, I did that through writing, so copywriting, public relations, that kind of way into that career as well.
All right, so you were actually kind of on the right path right from the beginning. It wasn't a real detour into some foreign type career. You were kind of finding your path along the writing way, huh?
I think so. And what's great about that, and what I didn't realize at the time was every manual I had to write about some electronic product, for example, you know, you don't know it at the time that you're actually building your skill set, but you are. So, you know, if I was writing a television spot or, whatever kind of writing you're doing, if you want to be a writer, that's adding to your arsenal. So
yep.
Just like life experiences do, the same thing with any kind of writing.
That's great. That's great. Now, take me a little bit away from the writing and into the real estate business. You founded a female-focused national franchise in real estate?
Yeah, so what happened was I had been in advertising, like I said, and then marketing. I went in-house for an Inc. 100 franchisor, Stanley Steemer. So I was there as vice president of marketing, and about the same time, I was there for a lot of years, but then my husband rolled up a bunch of residential real estate companies in Ohio, and overnight we became like the fourth largest privately held real estate company. And the thing that he was lacking was a brand to kind of unify them all. And that was my background. So I got to create a brand. And that's really a lot of that has to do with writing as well, because it's getting the words that you want to kind of solidify your brand and what you want people to think and feel and believe when they see your brand essence. So Real Living was born from that. And that was where I had the chance. I'd been marketing to women pretty much my entire career and helping industries see that women are, 51% of the population and make or influence 90% of all real estate transactions and most other transactions as well. So back then, all the marketing in real estate was focused towards men. You'd see like two guys shaking hands in front of a yard sign. And so the paradigm had kind of shifted. And so when we launched Real Living, we targeted our messaging to women who are the actual consumers. So that was a big shift back then, and the right shift.
Excellent. And that grew and became successful. And what year was that you guys were doing that?
So we launched Real Living in 2001, I believe, and it was great. It was instantly, I think it caught on because we also were on the wave of real estate being changed fundamentally by the internet. And so it kind of came along at the right time. We had a lot of internet tools and kind of the marketing and the positioning and all of that came together really well. And we ended up in 22 states before the huge crash of the industry.
Wow.
Yeah. So then, but luckily we had an opportunity to the Brookfield out of Canada was looking for a brand, and they had just bought the GMAC franchise and needed to change names. And so I tweeted them and they tweeted back, yeah, we are looking for a brand. And so they purchased the Real Living franchise name and system. And so that was happy.
So let me dig into that for just a quick little second. And I read that in
sure.
some of your material too. You really just out of the blue tweeted them. And Twitter was
yeah.
even back then was really brand new. So you tweeted them and that set the things in motion to actually sell your business to them.
Yeah, I mean, we had been the real estate industry is a close group, so you get to know the people in it. But I did, I had met Phil Soper, the man who was running Real Page, and I just said, hey, I heard you guys need a name, and you have a franchise system, GMAC, that needs a name, and we have a great brand that needs more franchises. So yeah, that's how it happened.
I love that story. That's one of those things that my listeners, I want to just kind of reiterate on, because what we study and what we look at as entrepreneurs and running things, and something as simple as, that morning you got up, I don't know if it was planned you were going to do it, but you just put out a little tweet, you took the effort, you did the activity, made a cold introduction, offering, to get together and talk about this, and it turned out to be a big, a very big significant move for you guys. And those are the kind of things that, what would have happened if you didn't do that? Okay. Maybe life wouldn't have,
right.
Evolved. It was just a simple movement, but that is so important to be able to just reach out and take those little activities like that. So I applaud you for that. That's very, very exciting. So let me dig into it because they ended up, you basically sold out, right? And you guys then left that business.
Well, my husband still stayed running Real Living franchise for a period of time. And yeah, usually marketing people, they're like, we've got our own marketing people. Goodbye. So yeah, all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And then we moved to California. And my oldest had picked a college out here. And my family is originally from California, and that had been the dream as well to get to the beach. So, so we were able to work from anywhere, and so we made the move out here. So that was another
beautiful
part of the dream for a long time. Yeah.
Yep. I love that part of your story too. Is packing up from Ohio, where you raised your family, and moving clear across the country, and then at that point, if I read correctly, that's when you became full time focused on writing your books and being a full time writer and author.
Yeah, it was interesting because prior to that, I had written and released Really You Incorporated, 8 Essentials for Women Entrepreneurs. And so I'd had a wonderful time, like really rewarding, going around the country and speaking to groups of women and men, entrepreneurs and, chambers of commerce people. But anyway, and really the message in there is only you can put your dreams into action. And, you got to put your passion into action. So it's up to you to take those steps, kind of like what you've been saying as well. And so I move across the country, we get the kids all settled in, and all of a sudden I'm sitting there in my house and I don't have a job anymore. It's the first time in forever that I'm not going to work. And I look at myself and I'm like, wait a minute, you've been telling people all across the country to put your passions into action. It's time for you to sit down and get to writing. So that's how it happened.
Beautiful. I love that. And I'm going to just reiterate that again as just a little nugget of great value for our listeners. Only you can put your passion and your dreams into action. That is great advice. That's a great line and something absolutely that's so true and very valuable. So then you start writing. You didn't start because you did have the book. What was the name of that? The nonfiction, 8 Essentials for Women Entrepreneurs. And you mentioned one thing I want to dig a little bit into on that, on your story, is you were going around the country speaking to Chamber of Commerce, probably everywhere you could do. You were actually marketing and selling your book, it sounds like, right?
Yeah, it was published by Wiley, so I had a big publisher behind it, but that's the funny thing about the book world, and anybody who's interested in being an author should know and expect. You write this book and you put all of your advice into it, or if it's a fiction book, then it's all your heart. And all of a sudden it comes out and people are like, no, now you got to go talk about the book. I'm like, oh, right, I didn't even realize that part. So that was an interesting dawning, I guess, for me. So that happened first with my with Real You Incorporated, and it's an interesting thing because really everything that I had to say is in the book, but you have to go speak about it to get people to read it. So anyway, it was a great experience. Though, like I said, I never imagined myself as a public speaker, and it took a little bit of time to get comfortable in that arena. But now I'm glad I learned that skill as well.
Yep. That's pretty fascinating and pretty neat. And it is, I've written a little bit, not a full novel or anything like that. I've done some book, but the funny parallel I see, and it's why I love interviewing authors, because I tell my producer all the time on when I'm talking to authors, I am talking to entrepreneurs. They are complete entrepreneurs. They're creating something from nothing that's going to live on forever. And they have to market it and sell it, because if they don't get out there and be the voice of it, no one's going to know about it. It's exactly the same as inventing a business from scratch. So some of my favorite entrepreneurs are authors. And it's amazing.
You're completely right.
It's very neat how, you had to get out there and do that.
And it's interesting too, now with all the choices of either self-publishing or, micro-press publishing, or even going with a traditional publisher, the marketing part is on you as the author, no matter how much support you get or don't get from a publisher.
Yep.
So it really is. It stays true, and it is very entrepreneurial.
Pretty neat. So let's get into so now you've moved from Ohio all the way back to your roots in California by the water, which is great, by the good weather, which is wonderful.
Right.
And you're starting to write. What was your first novel?
My first novel was Here Home Hope, a women's fiction novel about a woman having a midlife crisis. Wonder. And she sets about with a whole list of things to change in her life. And it's actually, it's completely fiction and it's not based on me, but it was a great segue from kind of the women's empowerment messages that were in my nonfiction book to a more fictionalized way of pretty much saying the same thing. At the end of the book, there's a checklist of things to change. And it's really all about taking control of your life and following your dreams. So that was a great way for me to kind of launch my career too.
That's pretty neat. Now, let me ask you this. When you're like writing that book and writing the, your most recent book, Best Day Ever, do you, as you, as, and there, do you try to put a underlying message in each of your book? Is there something?
I think it's more subtle in the imagination than that, but I think as an author, you bring forward your life experience into what you do, no matter what you're writing. So this latest book, as you said, Best Day Ever, you wouldn't immediately imagine it to be an empowering woman statement because you are introduced to a fairly horrible, narcissistic man who's the narrator through most of the book, as you know from reading it. So I would say it's not overt in the book, but I hopefully you would see if you read all of my books or even a couple of them that there is that thread of women empowerment in them.
Yep. That's kind of neat. It's kind of a more there's a story that goes on within the book, but then there's another story and a message that can come out through that. The one of the things I've seen on your web and whatnot is kind of have a theme behind closed doors of seemingly perfect lives. Tell me just a little bit about how you came to that.
Well, I mean, I think it's true, and especially now with social media, right? Everybody is curating their own image of their perfect lives. And whether it's, you know, using the right filter on your Instagram post or how you appear out in the world, you are a brand. Everybody's a brand. And that's kind of was the premise of Real You Incorporated, and it holds true today. So you have your personal brand and then your public image. And what a lot of, I guess, the angst comes about, especially I set my books mostly in the suburbs, and that whole notion of the grass is always greener next door, or the one-upsmanship, or trying to appear perfect. And there's a lot of pressure that goes with that, and a lot of sadness too. So I guess trying to saying truly that the perfect couple is the perfect illusion, and that's okay.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So
yep.
I guess that's kind of the theme underlying everything as well, is just, just try not to be what you're not.
It's a very intriguing premise, and certainly the Best Day Ever, as I read it, it was, you know, I mean, absolutely that came true. I mean, in a lot. Tell me a little bit about just in that book or in any of your writing, just where you your imagination, where you come up with a story. Is it based upon a person you met once or a group of people, or is it just totally invented out of the blue? How do you come up with your characters?
Yeah, all works of fiction, at least mine, start with a spark of something from the real world. But, for example, in Best Day Ever, Paul is nobody I've ever met, thankfully. He's kind of an amalgamation. And I think he's kind of been generated by a series of bad bosses that I had through my career.
Yeah.
So when I think about his like phrases that he says, some of them are reminiscent of some of those guys. So thank you
guys.
But anyway, I think like
you guys out there, you know who you are.
Yes, they do. Or they don't sometimes. I don't know.
Yeah.
But hopefully they're starting to because the time's up, right? Paul was, he's kind of that guy. He's a narcissist, and he's, he will tell you he's the best husband, the best father, the best provider, and they have the best house on the street. And I hopefully am not making him sound too terrible that you won't want to read the book, but he's also quite witty. And he promises his wife, Mia, that he's going to take her on a romantic weekend away, and the first day of their trip together will be the best day ever. And now you probably know from listening to this that it's not what it seems.
Yeah, it's definitely not what it seems, and it's fascinating. It's very exciting. It's very intriguing. The I grew up in Michigan. Michigan, and I had and I know you mentioned that you did it as you raised your children in Ohio, going to the lake. Well, and of course, Michigan, we all go north to the lakes. And I related as well to that, couple hour drive to the lake place where some of the intrigue comes out. It really is a remarkable setting for intrigue And it took me back, you know, on those drives and just going to a place, perfect setting for something like that to transpire.
Yeah, thank you. I thought so too. Just the charm and kind of the 1950s feel of Lakeside, Ohio, kind of juxtaposed with this character who's not what he
seems. That's it. Now,
yeah.
You know, just you know, like Paul Storm, I mean, he's there's quite a bit to him. Do you kind of based it off of a few people, you know, that you might have met through the years, and but do you then like dig into researching like a narcissist and just, you know, personality traits of somebody like that to be able to write that character so well, or is it just something you just kind of move it together? I mean, how much research goes into assembling these characters to make them so realistic and believable?
You know, with Paul, it was a combination. There is research. I think the most chilling research, I was online researching some stuff about Paul or Paul's type of personality, and I found myself in this chat room, which was for survivors of women who had gotten away from their narcissistic husbands. So they'd gotten away, or people in a relationship with narcissists. It was a safe place for these people to come and talk about their experiences and how they got away. And in pops this man and starts talking, like justifying somebody else's behavior, not even his own victim. Mm-hmm. But he's like, yeah, it was really chilling, because even there in the space that was supposed to be safe and for victims to talk amongst themselves, there they were, and there he was justifying his type. So that was pretty telling to me and chilling, and probably added some of Paul's, you know, just kind of clueless about anybody but themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, let me tell you, the book, I read it. It's a fast read. It's a good read. I read it this weekend. And once you start getting into it, you want to keep on going, and love the ending. It's really neat. One of the neat things I saw too at the end of the book is you put in a playlist that I thought was pretty clever of the weekend trip. That was a pretty neat touch, but I want to absolutely recommend it to my listeners out there to pick up the book. Tell us where we can get that book and where we can learn more about you and your other works.
Yeah. Best Day Ever is out right now. I was just at Barnes & Noble over the weekend. I'm like, oh, there it is still, which is really fun to see. So your favorite local indie Barnes & Noble stores and most bookstores across the country. And of course it's available online, and you can find me at Kara Ruta Books on Facebook and Instagram, Kara Ruta, and on my website is KairaRouda.com.
All right. Well, listen, I think it's a fabulous book. I recommend it. I'm going to look into some of your other novels, and I'm going to leave my listeners with one of the, I always like to get a little bit of advice, and you popped it out there with only you can put your dreams into action. And you clearly lived, you walked the talk when you did it, and your body of work is terrific. And I thank you for being our guest today. And with that,
thank
we're going to say goodbye to you. Yep. Have
All
a great
right,
day.
Thanks so much.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to The Art of High Performance Living. As your gift, I'll be happy to send you my best-selling book, Ignite Your Life. Co-authored by Brian Tracy and dozens of other leading entrepreneurs, sign up at imhighperformance.com or send me an email, mike@imhighperformance.com.
This copyrighted podcast is presented to you by Iron Mike Stone and the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network.